yeah, I think it's inevitable that there is going to be a shortfall over the next couple of weeks. And that's going to be felt economy-wide. You know, most people don't appreciate the importance of diesel macro in the economy because most people drive a gas-powered car. They don't understand that everything that they buy pretty much is shipped from where it was made or where it was grown via a diesel-powered heavy truck and was involved diesel-powered machinery to produce it, agricultural machinery, for example. And if the supply of that goes down, you know, even 10, 20%, that is going to result in significant ramifications, generally speaking, across the entire economy. So I don't know, again, unless the numbers are completely inaccurate, and they may well be, I do think it's inevitable that we're going to see some of these dislocations right around Thanksgiving.
Hi there. So good to be back with you on the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Kate Daly from katedalyradio.com. So glad to be with you. Today, we're going to be talking about possible diesel shortage. We're going to be talking about peak oil. We're going to be talking about left-right politics. And I've invited my friend Eric Peters from ericpetersautos.com on with me. And I'm so happy to have him because let me tell you, his website, at the very top of his website, it explains it all. Okay. Motorcycles, automobiles, and libertarian politics. And so he's always got a good feel for what's happening in the world, what's going on in politics, and then gives his views on that too, and describes automobiles, cars. This is the guy. This is the aficionado. This is the guy to go to if you ever have a question about engines, about cars. And so I cannot wait to talk to him about diesel fuel shortages. It's very, very interesting that we got told there were 25 days left, which would hit around Thanksgiving, that there were 25 days left before the elections. Kind of weird timing, don't you think? You think that would be something that they would maybe, I don't know, wait until after the elections to pounce on people if this was true and we were going towards this diesel shortage. It was almost like, man, they're just trying to take it down in a fury and they're just trying some things on us that are kind of interesting. We'll get into all of that. But let me introduce Eric Peters. Eric's had this site for a long time. And let me tell you, I probably met you maybe 7, 8 years ago, Eric. I'm so happy to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm good. Isn't it strange? I'm a guy who writes about cars that actually doesn't hate cars.
Yes, that is strange. And you know what? You're the go-to guy. I hope people visit your site because I'm telling you, you have so much information there if you're looking or whatever the case may be. So we got told there was a diesel shortage. And so I want to get your take on whether or not this is true because I've been talking to a lot of truckers. The truckers aren't buying it. They're saying that diesel shortages, and if you do look in the news, you'll see a lot of shortages, a lot of claims and so forth. And they're saying the 10-year average, there's usually about 33 days worth of diesel. And so 25 days isn't like a huge, maybe a huge problem. But I want to get your take on this because there's a whole nother side to this that we are seeing the inflation. We are seeing the things that tank the United States and they are doing it on purpose and it is manufactured. So how far will they go?
Well, fundamentally, this is a supply constraint issue. And I titled my article about this peak oil, which I think sets the predicate for it. You know, for the past 50 something years, they've been telling people that we're about to run out of oil. Anybody who's older than 30 will have heard the term peak oil before. Of course, the problem is that we never ran out of oil. So they had to do something to artificially decrease the supply of oil. And that's exactly what Biden did after he got elected. And shortly after he came into office, the cost of gas and diesel roughly tripled, right? You know, just because supply versus demand, very simple. But that created a big political problem for Biden and for the left because, you know, whatever your politics, when it costs you 70, 80, 90 bucks to fill up your car, you tend to get irritated about it. And then we've got the midterms coming up. So what Biden did was to try to artificially and temporarily increase the supply of oil to tamp down prices before the midterms by dumping oil onto the market via the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. And that did work. Hey, we're only paying twice as much now rather than three times as much for gas and diesel. But again, he drained the reserve and there was not an increase in the actual supply chain. So that accounts for this shortfall and for the possibility of significant trauma in the economy resulting from that in the coming weeks. My understanding is that the current stockpile, particularly of diesel, is something like 26 million barrels shy and at the lowest ebb since 1982. And that's not factoring in the increase in population over the past 40 years. And I think, you know, the more I roll this around in my head, that what they may be attempting to do here is to drop a bag of poo, if you will, in the lap of the Republicans after the midterms. I think they foresee that even with all the jiggering that they're probably going to try to do, that the Republicans are going to do really well come Tuesday. So what then? Well, a couple of weeks after that, all of a sudden people are finding the shelves are becoming bare and it's hard to get things and the price of everything is going up. And the Democrats and the left, they're going to say, look what you did. You elected these awful Republicans and now they're cratering the economy. I think that that's what this is all about fundamentally.
Interesting. Okay. And the raise in prices, the high gas prices for no apparent reason, the blaming on Russia, which was ridiculous from the start, and most people could see through it. Even those on the, I think the most leftist progressive could see that this was a sham on the high prices. Is it a payout for oil to switch to the green agenda quietly and silently? Is this the way they pay, like the prepayment for oil to just not halt what's coming and move over and maybe pay? Are we paying for that move over in our high gas prices?
It may not be anything that sinister. It may simply be this general corporate poltroonery, this fear of being seen as not on the right side of woke. You know, the people at the highest echelons of corporations are desperate to show, even to the extent of undermining their own business, that they agree with all these shibboleths of the left. I posted an article earlier today that dovetails with this about a Volkswagen commercial, you know, and the commercial is about two guys and a sheep. Okay. That sets the stage for that. Two gay guys and their sheep frolicking around. And, you know, kind of peripherally, sort of, you see a Volkswagen car in the commercial, but they don't tell you anything about why you should be interested in buying this car. It's all about peddling to you this agenda, you know, to signal the virtue that, look, we're all for gay couples with sheep, you know, not so much as, hey, this is a great car. It's got a lot of room. It's got a great engine or whatever the selling point is. They're not trying to sell you a car. They're trying to virtue signal. And that may be exactly right. What's going on with the oil companies, too.
Maybe, because I feel like there has to be a reason. There's a reason, of course, they want to cause inflation. They want to cause a shortage. And so all of this is very manipulated, but very real to us. So when I say manipulated, sometimes people, I think, don't understand. It's manipulated, but it's real to us. So it's theater, but real. And of course, there has to be some kind of payout. You don't just keep oil companies silent. You don't just keep them silent on basically transforming their entire industry in the way they profit, though. There's got to be something else there. The money's being paid. There's also a $30 trillion trough sitting there. I think money that's been hijacked and laundered out of the United States that could go towards keeping oil companies very comfortable in their move over. Because normally you would see them up in arms over all of this, but you're not seeing that at all. They're very, very silent on the matter and reaping huge benefits at our expense right now still. So
well, that could be a function of their having been browbeaten into submission. You know, these corporations are absolutely terrified of coming out in public and saying anything that contradicts any of the narratives of the left. You can see it in practically any industry. If somebody on the left shrieks, you know, that they've been offended by whatever it is, then the corporation will roll over and expose its belly and plead with them to be kicked. Right. That's that's symptomatic of the culture of corporate America, unfortunately, these days. And I personally think that explains it more than anything else.
Okay. And it is odd, a diesel shortage, that's being parceled out because, you know, when they make diesel, the whole process of that, we're going to go to a break pretty soon, but the whole process of that, if people understand, that is a strange thing to parcel out as a shortage, don't you think?
Well, again, it depends. You take a certain quantity of oil, you take a barrel of oil, and then the refining process is essentially a distillation process to get different grades of fuel out of it, with diesel and kerosene being, the easiest thing to distill. Then you go up all the way up to gasoline. And it's allocated according to, at least it used to be in the past, it was allocated according to what it was estimated the market required. I don't know what they're basing their allocations on now. So, you know, there's just a lot of balls up in the air, and I think we're gonna see them come down in the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely. My guest is Eric Peters from ericpetersautos.com. That's two S's in there, ericpetersautos.com. He's got a great site. And that commercial that he brought up, we need to talk about that a little bit more after the break too, because that commercial, honestly, it really was. It was two guys walking around with a sheep, two guys with a sheep in the car, two guys with a sheep at home. I mean, it was very odd that they're trying to sell a car like that. And so I think Eric is right on about the virtue signaling of a lifestyle. They're selling a lifestyle. They're not selling a car. And anyway, the Tiguan. Anyway, so I think it's bizarre. I'll be right back. I'm Kate Daly, your guest host for The Alex Jones Show. Be right back.
Once a tragedy reaches a level of national significance, American citizens should be allowed to basically question that event in any way that they deem fit.
The First Amendment is unique in the world. That's what they want to take away, your ability to speak freely.
So they're going
to
go for Mike Lindell next. Or are they going to go for Steve Bannon? Or are they going to go for Tucker Carlson?
I studied the globalists 30 years ago, but on air 28 years, and I knew they were planning all of this. And I warned the public as a modern Paul Revere. But I couldn't have done it without your support. And now, because we've been so successful warning the population of the planet, not just America, we're public enemy number one when it comes to the globalist agenda. That's why it's more important than ever to realize how successful InfoWars has been because of your past support. So I salute you and I thank you. And I ask you now, at the critical juncture of the battle, to redouble your efforts by visiting InfoWarsStore.com and getting amazing products that keep us on air. 1776 is the promo code. The destination is InfoWarsStore.com. And I thank you all for your support.
Welcome back. Love to be back here with you. And of course, talking about cars, talking about diesel, talking about peak oil, talking about all kinds of things today. And I'm talking about those things with my friend Eric Peters from ericpetersautos.com. It's like car logic and insight and politics insights. And so I love Eric's take. I do want to mention, too, with elections being next week, look, there are no tight races. It's virtually impossible to have a tight race when actually a majority of the country is pretty conservative. So the tight races that they're having, and we'll get back to cars in just a moment, but I just wanted to mention this just because the election is next week. The races are not as tight as they portray. And it's polling that has taken us down and a very dark, deep road, because polling doesn't reflect what Americans think. It sways what Americans think because it's constantly asking you to think like your neighbor. And the problem is that we believe the polls, and the polls are usually fake when it comes to maybe saying that we have these tight races, very, very tight races. The reason for the tight races, I believe, is because they're about to perpetuate fraud. And if they can get people to believe that it was a tight race and, ooh, just lost by a hair, it was razor thin, then we won't complain as much when somebody is installed that you didn't want, that you didn't vote for. And so there, I think there's a lot of this going on right now in the country. Every race seems to be that razor tight. Give me a break. It just can't happen that way, especially after Blovid and everything else that's happened in the last several years. There's no way you could have races that tight. But again, they're going to try to do that. And so we'll talk about left-right politics, but I want to get your take on that, Eric.
Sure. Well, I think you're right. And I think one of the facets of that is that at one moment in time, this country had Democrats. Now we've got leftists. And I think there's an important distinction between the two. And leftists, I think, are a considerable minority of people in this country, whereas Democrats were once, you know, a significant portion of the population. And these leftists have worked night and day to convey to us, to try to persuade us that their worldview is the world's view. Everybody is non-binary and has blue hair and has a sheep in the back seat. You know, that's the image that they want to portray so that people will think, I guess I'm, you know, maybe I'm a weirdo. Maybe everybody is like this. I'll jump on that bandwagon too.
So true. So don't believe the polls. But you know what? This is a good opportunity. I would blast away on social media your voting. You know, conservatives typically do not put out there what they vote, who they vote for. But when you see a smattering of who I voted for kind of messages throughout the state of people that you're close to in community, it's kind of hard to for them, I think, to hide some of the fraud that's happening, because it's obvious. You can't have these razor tight races. They just don't happen like that. And so especially to repellent people like Evan McMuffin, the breakfast sandwich, you know, liar, 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 CIA liar, and was back when he was running for president, and the guys never stopped. And so they try to portray a race like that as razor tight. No, it's not. But we still have to make sure that we cast a vote. I think it's our conscience. I think our conscience would say at least cast the vote. What they do with that vote is on their shoulders, but at least you're casting one. So let's get back to gas and oil. So does the shortage happen in your estimation and in your perspective? Do you think we're looking at a shortage or the milking of prices even further? What do you think happens?
Well, I think if the numbers are accurate, and you know, these days you can't trust any numbers coming out of the federal government, but nonetheless, assuming that the numbers are accurate, yeah, I think it's inevitable that there is going to be a shortfall over the next couple of weeks. And that's going to be felt economy-wide. You know, most people don't appreciate the importance of diesel macro in the economy, because most people drive a gas-powered car. They don't understand that everything that they buy pretty much is shipped from where it was made or where it was grown via a diesel-powered heavy truck, and was involved diesel-powered machinery to produce it, agricultural machinery, for example. And if the supply of that goes down, you know, even 10-20%, that is going to result in significant ramifications, generally speaking, across the entire economy. So I don't know. Again, unless the numbers are completely inaccurate, and they may well be, I do think it's inevitable that we're going to see some of these dislocations right around Thanksgiving.
Yeah, sadly, I have a diesel, and it's not pretty. What can people do with those diesel engines, though? We do have alternatives. Things we can
well,
do.
Well, yeah, you know. Actually, I think you and I talked about this briefly the last time we got together. And one of the really nice things about diesel vehicles, at least most of them, not some of the new ones, there are exceptions to this because of all the federal folderol and the equipment that they're saddled with. But older diesels in particular can burn biodiesel, waste vegetable oil, homebrew. So, you know, it's possible for an average person to produce their own fuel in a pinch. And if they can't produce it, there's probably somebody in their community who can. Whereas gasoline, forget about it. You have to have a refinery in order to produce gasoline. True. So there's a real big advantage there with having a diesel.
Is it hard to do? Is it hard to come up with those recipes? Is it difficult to make it?
No. You know, I mean, the diesel engine itself was designed to literally burn things like rapeseed oil. Any kind of oil practically will combust inside a diesel engine. So, you know, it's just a matter of procuring the necessary vegetable precursors and then making oil. And if you can make oil, you can make basically diesel, because that's what we're talking about.
Good to know. See, somebody like me, I'm not that into cars. I don't know enough about them. This is why I rely on Eric to come on and talk about this. So you were talking about the Tiguan, too, and the selling of lifestyles. We're seeing this more and more. And we're also seeing the urge to go they're trying to get us to go buy electric cars, although they've gone up 60% for the cost of them, knowing, I think, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is a deliberate attempt to say, go get an electric car, because they absolutely know it will never work. The people will never want them in droves, and they know that it's a dead end on purpose. I really feel like that. But I want to get your take on the electric car, the selling of what they the electric car to the American people, because Americans aren't having it.
Well, the electric cars that are available, for the most part, almost all of them, are fundamentally, at minimum, entry luxury cars in terms of their price. So, you know, no matter what you think about the virtues of electric cars and leaving aside all of their functional liabilities, the bottom line is that most Americans cannot afford to spend $50,000, which is the entry price for something like a Tesla 3, and that's a Honda Civic sedan-sized car, and it's not really viable for a family. You know, mm-hmm. From there on up, it's just economics. You know, leaving aside the range problems, the recharge problems, where's the electricity going to come from? you're talking about increasing the cost of a car by about 30% to 50%, depending on the model. And that's in an economy where the buying power of our money has been diminished by 8 to 12%, again, minimum, depending on whose numbers you believe. How does that pencil out? How does that work? How can you turn effectively the entire car market over into a luxury car market? Well, what you're doing is reversing the entire progression of the last 120 years. When Henry Ford brought out the car, his Model T, what he did was to make cars available for the masses, whereas previously they had been largely hand-built and were for the rich elites. But what's happening now is through these government regulations and mandates and all that other stuff, that whole thing is being upended and vehicles are being made once again into the indulgences of the affluent. That's what we're talking about. So I see electric cars as the vehicle for getting you and I and the other unwashed, deplorable masses out of cars and into a government-run bus, train, or a bicycle.
And this is exactly why we have Agenda 30. It was to implement all those bike trails you see everywhere and all of those modes of transportation and a lot more buses being paid for. We'll be right back on the Kate Daly, on the Alex Jones Show. I'm Kate Daly, your guest host for Alex Jones, the great Alex Jones. Be right back. Back here with you on the Alex Jones Show. I'm Kate Daly, your guest host, katedalyradio.com. Eric Peters is my guest from Eric Peters Autos. And before we leave today, we have to have a little fun. I got to ask you the best investments in automobiles for those struggling with the economy. You know, they get the best bang out of their buck. I'm going to be asking you about that, Eric, because I know you know. And also just talking a little bit about this, all these things that are happening before the election. We have the whole Pelosi scandal and Pelosi's friend. And then his buddy. Then we have the whole, you know, the diesel shortage alert, letting us know that this is going to be happening. We've got the economy. We've got all Biden's King Fraudalot's gaffes, you know, all present, all accounted for, always in our face. They don't try to hide it. And I look at all these things and I wonder if they're purposefully, again, moving us to the right, because maybe World War III is kind of in their line sight and they make a lot of profit, a lot of money off of continuous wars, more wars. And so maybe there is a purposeful tanking to get us to move to the right, to then adopt a little bit more of that view. And when I say right, I mean neocon right. I used to be one of those, you know, 12 years ago. So I get what I get, how they're thinking. No longer. Once you do a little homework, you're no longer a neocon. But I want to get your take on what do you think has been going on the last few years, moving into this election and so forth? Where are we headed?
Well, let's see. Among the many facets of this, I think that their arrogance may prove to be their undoing with regard to your comment about their in our face attitude about things. I think they are so confident that they've locked everything down that they no longer have to worry about pulling their punches, that they can just be very overt about what the agenda is. This morning I read, and I haven't confirmed this, but you may know more about it than I, that something like 6,000 American troops are now on the ground in Ukraine. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I haven't confirmed anything. But we're sending more and more troops. There's more and more troops. So yes, on the ground.
Yeah. You know, I don't understand how it benefits the Ukrainian people, no matter how sympathetic you are toward what might be going on over there, to initiate World War III, because the first place that's going to get nuked is Ukraine. And then the rest of us are going to get nuked after that. And I think that there's a degree of historical amnesia. You know, if you go back 100 and something years, ask people whether they thought World War I was worth fighting over Sarajevo. And ask them today, well, you know, if that wasn't worth it, however many people were killed in World War I, something like, I don't know, 30 or 40 million people died in that conflict. How many people are going to die in a potential nuclear conflict with Russia over Ukraine? It is halting. I can't even sometimes come up with the words to discuss it, because it's just that literally crazy. On the other hand, maybe it's not, because, you know, the best thing that they can do in terms of maintaining their position is to have the country be under siege and threatened by a foreign enemy, have a war occur, and then wrap themselves in the flag and accuse anybody who criticizes them of lacking patriotism, per what Reichsmarshal Hermann Göring said in the dock when he was in Nuremberg.
Absolutely. Well, in World War One, they convinced us that Germany was going to take over the world. They couldn't have, they wouldn't have, but we were convinced of it enough to go into World War One when we were very against war. And now they're doing the same thing with Russia. Russia's been the bad guy threat for over 80 years. And still, we have yet to be nuked because we have more firepower than anybody. And so to have these enemies, it's absolutely just asinine at this point that anybody still believes what's happening. And usually at the helm is us perpetuating an event and then blaming another country. And so, and I'm not talking about us, the American people. We wouldn't have that. We wouldn't be doing this. It's people that do things in our name. And it's usually those that are running the country and those in the CIA and those in Naval Intelligence and all these different groups that are doing things like this or perpetuating them from the administration level. And it's just sickening. I wish people could finally figure out that this is happening in our name. Like, because when you were talking about wrapped in the flag, I mean, we are a good people here. We would never condone this, but we're somehow, we get sort of thrown into this emotional triggering. And it's just insane at this point. So the theater of war, but I can see it them moving us to the right. Why would they be purposefully tanking the country and then showing us how much dementia Biden has? I mean, it's absolutely, you have to kind of look at now, wait a second. Why is all this happening before the election? It's almost as if they're doing it on purpose and then saying, oh my gosh, we had a red wave. I mean, and when we have a red wave with so many neocons in, are we actually doing anything with the red wave? That's my biggest concern, too. Well, yeah. I don't know that we are.
A really good point. I think that, gosh, I've been waiting for this my whole life. If there is a red wave and they don't do anything with the power that they get,
right,
then I think the Republican Party will have proved that it's useless and should go the way of the Whigs. I don't think that the people who support the Republicans, conservatives, libertarians, all the people on our side of the aisle are going to tolerate it if all they do is talk and go along with whatever the left wants. Again, it's just not acceptable. It can't happen anymore. So, I see a number of good trends as bad as things are, and that's one of them. Another, I think, is that reality is beginning to bite, as us Gen X people would say. For a long time, for decades, these things, like these foreign policy things, they're abstract and they're rhetorical. Nothing has directly affected American people here. So it's easy to wrap yourself in the flag and say, yeah, let's go over and get rid of Saddam and all these sorts of things. But if these things have real consequences, if American cities are attacked by Russian strategic missile forces, that's really going to affect people. It's really going to affect people if they can't buy food because of contrived diesel shortages. These things are real. You know, people are looking at what it costs to buy food. People are looking at what it's costing to buy cars just to live. These are real things that are the result of policies. And I think people are beginning to connect the dots and understand that these policies have ramifications. And I think they're beginning to question a lot of them, their support for a lot of these policies, including the whole climate change boogeyman.
Right. Absolutely. Too many neocons like Romney's and then too few stand apart, standalones that will actually stand up to the system. And that's why, I'm a registered Republican, but I'll tell you, it's been really tough. It was tough to watch under Trump when we had the House and we had the Senate and we did nothing. We still have a socialized medicine. We still have Obamacare. And if that hasn't hit home, it should have in COVID, Blovid-19, because the only people that were dying at the hands of the ICU under a sanctioned experimental drug called remdesivir. They weren't dying of a plague. The only plague, in fact, the plague didn't happen. It's really an IQ test, and I really do believe that. And so so here we are. We've got everybody's sitting there. They've got cars. They've got, they're struggling to get to work. They're struggling to pay groceries, and it might get worse is what we're saying, where it's going to get worse. I think it's actually going to get worse. Preparing is probably the key right now. And what would you be doing right now as far as preparing?
Well, there's a number of things you can do. I myself have made provisions to assure that we don't freeze this winter by having plenty of firewood, making sure that the propane tanks are full. So if the power goes off, at least we'll be able to keep warm.
Right.
And obvious things like that, having an adequate supply of necessities around the house for yourself and for your family. And fuel, too, is not a bad idea. To get back to diesel, one of the other virtues of diesel is that it stores far better than gas. If you buy a 5-gallon jug of gas, you know, unless it's sealed really tightly and has fuel stabilizer in it, you probably aren't going to want to use it if it's been sitting there for 4 or 5 months. Diesel, on the other hand, as long as you put algicide in it, it will last for years in a jug. So it might be good if you have a diesel-powered car to go ahead and stock up on some diesel for just in case so that you can get around.
Yeah, diesel fuel, by the way, is the best fire starter on the planet. I don't know if people have realized this. Yeah. I'm sure a lot of you guys out there know this. What's that?
It's safer because it's not as volatile. You know, if you take some gas and throw it on the wall, touch a match, you might, you know, roast off your eyebrows. That's not going to happen with diesel.
Oh, that's very, very true. Look, you know, we have a lot coming and we're telling you prepare, buy supplements, make sure you have your food storage intact, make sure you're doing those things weekly because there's a very short window right now as to acquiring things at these prices. I would definitely prepare as much as possible, store as much as possible. And it's the only way to go. We'll be right back. More with Eric Peters from Eric Peters Autos. He is my guest in this hour on the Alex Jones Show. I'll be right back.
Don't let the globalist monsters and their mercenary minions be successful at silencing you. And the globalists' number one mission is to silence InfoWars because they rightly see us as one of the main beacons of resistance, alerting the people, not just of America, but the world, to the threat of the globalists and their censorship and tyranny. That's why it's so essential today, now more than ever, to share links for InfoWars.com and to also financially support InfoWars.com at the most critical time in our fight by using promo code 1776 at checkout so you get an additional 10% off. These people are coming for your birthright. They're coming for your First Amendment. They admit once they've silenced us, they're coming for you. I'm in your hands, and I'm asking for your support now. You have my commitment to never give up or back down, but I could give out without your support. Thank you for all your past support, and I'm encouraging you now to redouble your efforts at InfoWarsStore.com with promo code 1776 for an additional 10% off on the already big sales and huge discounts.
Back here with you on the Alex Jones Show. I'm Kate Daly, your guest host from KateDalyRadio.com. I spend every day talking on the air for 3 solid hours about all of these things that we're talking about right now. And I'm talking about these things with Eric Peters, my guest from EricPetersAutos.com. And here's the deal. You know, we talk about the Great Reset. Alex wrote a great book, actually, about the Great Reset. And they want us to be confined to cities. This is obvious. This is why they've implemented all the bike trails, the city transportation. They put so much money into that. They upped considerably the amount of money that they were putting into Amtrak. And when I noticed that in the last bill they put forth, it was curious, right? Why the money into Amtrak? No one even hardly thinks about having travel in that direction. I mean, it's ridiculous. But a lot more money into Amtrak. They want us out of cars. I think they want us out of planes. They want us out of the freedom of the transportation of an automobile. They want us reliant on city transportation. It's obvious. And so how do we fight this? And so as we're fighting it, because we still need to fight it, Eric, as we're looking forward, I mean, what would you do as a smart move? Because knowing the direction they're going in, knowing that oil is being very silent on this as we move into the love of Mother Earth, I guess, to replace God in this country is really what they're trying to do. The love of Mother Earth, all things done for Mother Earth, even though it means nothing, does nothing, and has never affected us at all in my lifetime that I've been told there was climate change at the end of every decade, we would die. That never happened. And I can't even tell you one way that it's ever actually affected me. So with everybody understanding that, what would be smart? Everybody wants to know, what's the smart move then? Do I get an electric bike? How do I deal with this?
Don't get an electric anything in the first place. Yeah. And in the second place, because, you know, if you do that, you're tying yourself to this centralized top-down structure. You know, you're expecting the utilities to be on to provide you with electricity. And we all know already they're talking about rolling blackouts because the grid capacity isn't sufficient to deal with the existing load. And if you start piling on additional load through these electric cars, it's simply not going to work. And they know that. So don't do that. Something that you can do, if you're able to do it, this is something, of course, you generally have to be younger to be able to do it. But if you got yourself a motorcycle, I've got a bunch of them, you can get yourself a commuter type bike or a dual sport, and a lot of these bikes will get anywhere from 60 to 80 to 100 miles per gallon. And you can put some saddlebags on the side of the thing, and you can use that as a means of getting around and getting to the store when you need to, and hardly use any fuel at all. If you have a couple of 10, you know, 5 gallon jugs of gas, that will provide you with transportation for a pretty long time, as opposed to a car. So that's one thing you can do. But I think just more fundamentally, this is about refusing to accept the diminution of your liberty and your mobility, and snatch it back, and do not accept being gaslit and cowing into a corner and agreeing, oh yes, I'm just spoiling the planet, I'm helping to change the climate. No, we're not. You know, we're dealing with a potential facade here. All you have to do is say no to these people and they'll fold. That's the key to everything. Right. Say no, I'm not doing it. And why should I do it? And compel them to substantiate their claims, not with assertions and feelings, but with facts. And if you do that, we win and they lose.
Yeah, absolutely. And so here's some ideas. You know, the states should be, we have plenty of resources in America. We all know this. The 70s shortage was absolutely fabricated. And when they started to go around the country to talk about the fact that we had more resources than we knew what to do with here, of course, people were fired quickly and the EPA was brought in and everything else. So here we are as states. The governors are very silent. They're not going to be offering the fact that, hey, my state can control the oil and gas within my state, because we do have a whole country full of unlimited, really, resources here that we never tap into or talk about. The other thing, too, that I'm not seeing cities do, cities have an awful lot of your money because we're being taxed at close to almost 50% when you put it all together. So why aren't they stockpiling diesel for you? Why aren't they stockpiling gas for you? Why aren't they doing these things? Because you're never hearing cities talk about this. But we need to press our cities and press our states to get separated from the feds, because everybody believes the feds have to control this. And they love it. The feds love this idea. And so what do you think about cities stockpiling in states?
Well, once again, you know, you're right. People have been conditioned to think contrary to the whole foundational premise of this country, which was federalism, which was the idea that you had a central authority for a few specific functions, but by and large, most of the other functions devolved to the states, and the states dealt with these matters. And it was a key and important thing, not only as a check on federal power, but also because it gave people options and alternatives. You know, you could go to this state here, for example, had more liberty, more freedom, lower taxes, rather than the states you were adjacent to. And that applied pressure on the state that wasn't so free to, hey, you know, maybe we need to do this because people are leaving, business is leaving. We need to get back to that. There's absolutely no reason why states that have within their own borders energy resources can't make use of them and give the lie to this energy scarcity thing, which is completely contrived and artificial. You know, I think people may remember, I hope to God they remember, that it's only about 2 years ago that America was energy independent and was on the cusp of becoming a net exporter of oil. You know, so much for peak oil. They just simply turned the spigot off. There's plenty of energy in this country. And the reason that they turned it off is because affordable, abundant energy means general wealth for average people, and general wealth means that they're not terrified and living in fear and dependent on the government. And that is what this thing is all about.
Amen, Eric Peters. Amen to that whole statement. That's exactly what this is. And so people need to be pressing their cities. If they're going to create a shortage, then the cities need to get in right now and start stockpiling for their folks, the very folks they're taking taxes from, and make sure that people are covered, also yourself. So I'm not going to put everything on cities and states. It's us. It's us as an individual that needs to prepare. But man, we do not take advantage of some of the things. We could really lean on our cities and counties right now to do the right thing, because heavens knows they're doing many of the wrong things. So I can't leave this this hour without asking you. People are in a crunch. They can hardly afford anything right now. What kind of car do they drive? What lasts the longest? What's the most reliable? What's the best way to bank your money on a car right now?
Boy, that's a tough one. Well, certainly I wouldn't be looking for a used vehicle right now, because, you know, another one of the surreal things we're dealing with is the explosive increase in transaction prices for used vehicles, which are approaching the transaction prices of new cars. With that said, if you're going to buy a car, whether it's used or new, I would lean towards something that's useful in some way. There is a reason why trucks are the best-selling cars. in the countries, because trucks are useful. They're useful for carrying around people, and they're useful for doing work. So I'm a big proponent of trucks, and the simpler the better. You know, go back a couple of years and get something that's free of a lot of the worst of the big brothery tech that's coming online now. And that brings up something else too. If you're going to get a new car, there's still a number of new cars that are fundamentally old cars in that they haven't been redesigned in the course of the past several years. A really good example of that is the Dodge Charger, which hasn't been updated much in the past 12 years. And thank God for that. And it's just a shame that Dodge had to cave. Well, Dodge didn't cave. Dodge is owned by Stellantis, which is this big corporate combine. And, you know, so they had to go ahead and go along with the green shibboleth and abandon the Hemi V8 and everything that made these cars, which sell like gangbusters, despite the fact they haven't been updated in 12 years. People love these cars. And you know why they love them? Because they're big American rear drive cars with V8 engines. That's what people want. And that's what they're trying to take away from you. Anyway, so, you know, if you can find a vehicle that's still new and has a new warranty, but doesn't have a lot of the cloying, parenting, insipid safety technology. I always use that voice to articulate that point. I would recommend snapping one up if you can.
What year do you go back to find a car that does not have the technology that if the grid went down, it wouldn't be affected?
That really depends. Generally speaking, if you want to be free from most of the worst of it, the telematics, the connectedness, you know, that plugs you in literally over the air to the hive mind, kind of like the Teslas. But, you know, people don't know that it's not just the Teslas. It's a lot of the new car, the non-electric new cars, too. You probably need to go back to around 2005 as a general rule or before.
I was thinking like 80s or 90s. Interesting.
Well,
okay.
If you want to get something that's completely divorced from electronica that you can still adjust and tune and largely take care of yourself, you're going to want a pre-computer car, a pre-fuel injected car. And that's going to mean something generally built before the mid-1980s that will have a carburetor, will be a simple mechanical thing that you can take care of if you can read a basic owner's manual.
Right. I can drive stick, so I'm all in that. Okay, I think that's two. I got a lot of stick shifts back then. And Toyotas, those kinds of cars, like the 4Runner, things like that, are those still kind of the top of the you know, you're gonna put your money in and it's gonna last?
Absolutely. Like one of my favorites is you know, the Toyota Tacoma.
Yeah.
And the 4Runner, which is the SUV version of the same thing. Those are 300,000 mile vehicles. Really excellent vehicles. Can't say enough good about them. And the Toyota Corolla,
Thank
too. You know, you see regularly.
Yes. We've got to go. Ah, darn it. All right. Thanks. Thanks, Eric Peters from Eric Peters Autos. Really appreciate you. I'm Kate Daly, your guest host for The Alex Jones Show. Thanks a lot.
You know where the CIA tunes in, right? You know where the Russians tune in? You know everybody tunes in, right? You know who Tucker Carlson tunes into and Joe Rogan and Elon Musk? You know where they tune in, right? They tune in right here.
InfoWars, tomorrow's news, today.
We are witnessing the Mark of the Beast system openly rolled out and announced. Whether you believe the Bible is inspired by God or the Word of God or not, what was written over 2,000 years ago by John the Revelator on the Isle of Patmos is coming true. A world government that makes you take a mark in the hand or the head to be able to buy and sell, and that you must worship the beast. That means follow what the beast says, or you can't buy or sell. It's not just that you have to have the mark to buy or sell. You've got to do what the beast wants you to do, or you cannot buy and sell. And that's where, in late 2022, we are. Last week, the World Economic Forum was given over $100 million by Government of Canada to roll out a world ID through the UN based on the Communist Chinese digital social credit score system. And now, just today, Bill Gates came out. Here's the article right here. And his foundation donated $200 million to expand digital ID surveillance system for the same Chinese communist control program. So the social credit score in communist China and all the control you see is the model of this system being rolled out in Spain, rolled out in Italy, rolled out in Germany, rolled out in Canada, and now they're trying to roll it out here in America. Just a few years ago, Klaus Schwab, the head of the WEF, said, you will have to take a microchip to buy and sell in the near future. And now here we are. So this is a huge, huge issue that they can then dictate to you through this new digital currency, through this world ID, every action you take in your life with a carbon tax, through the social credit score, through universal basic income as they shut off the regular economy and small businesses, making you sign on for government handout. But with that handout comes all of the rules of the game. This is no longer theoretical on some drawing board or some computer. This is something the bureaucrats and the mega corporations and major governments are doing. There's a race between the West and communist China to see with big tech who can put this in first. So it's scary, but at least we are exposing it, and at least we know about it. Just last week, PayPal said, if you criticize government, if you criticize open borders or forced injections or anything else, gun control, we're going to fine you $2,500 for what we say you're doing in your own personal life. We're going to surveil you, and then we're going to censor you. But within days of the announcement, they had to back off because of the backlash. So submitting to this only makes things worse. Standing up to it and saying no only makes things better. And that's why it's so important today, ladies and gentlemen, to say no to world war, no to nuclear war, no to open borders, no to pedophilia, no to the Satanism that is the New World Order. And you cannot do that better than sharing the articles and videos and links from InfoWars.com and Band.Video to be the Paul Revere's of your era and to get amazing products that God gave us through Mother Nature to empower our stamina, our energy, our libido, everything else, including our immune systems. And that's why if you want to support the InfoWar at this critical time, go to InfoWarsStore.com and get X3, the missing link for health that blocks the bad halogens. It's the good halogen, the opposite of fluoride, at InfoWarsStore.com, 50% off. We've got a Save InfoWars 1776 mega sale running for the next week. The biggest sales up to 60% off in the history of InfoWars at InfoWarsStore.com. Thank you so much and join us during this important part of history.